And welcome to episode 344 of Muse on Minis. I'm Nigel. I play Kador.
Brent and I play Signar.
This is Seabass, and I play Kador.
Good. Finally.
So this week we had exciting news that I've been waiting for since it was first announced. The dynamic update for Signar has finally come through. So in this update, the first and I think most important change that everyone's been waiting for has been E-Leaps have finally gotten nerfed, air quotes. If you haven't seen the update, E-Leaps will not jump to a lightning immune model or from a lightning immune model, which means you no longer have to worry about that crafty Signar player running a single Storm Lance into the middle of all of your carefully spaced lines and shooting it repeatedly until everything falls over and dies.
Are flags lightning immune?
They are not.
God
flags
damn
will
it.
Still eat shots. But that means that there's a number of things that are relevant here. It means that a lightning elite based list will need an answer to clouds and stealth, whereas previously they just needed to have something I could get there and shoot repeatedly. That answer could consist of things as simple as running a Centurion in. It will not, however, be as simple as running a Stormpod in, unfortunately. I think, obviously, this is a nerf, and obviously this is bad. And obviously, I've abused my chance. I've abused this rule a lot, in particular killing Stalkers, because a Crick Stalker within 20 inches of a Storm Lance is basically just dead. In general, good step for the game. Super, super good step for the game. It means that Signar doesn't need to have one list be Storm Division anymore. It means that there's more list diversity in Signar, which we'll get to in a minute. And it means that the rest of the game now has something they can do outside of incorporeal spacing.
And that's essentially what Privateer Press said in the notes. They basically said that this rule has been changed to address some unforeseen and quite strong benefits of targeting your own models that have immunity electricity to circumvent many opposing special rules. That's essentially exactly what Privateer Press said. The one thing I would offer is, and I'm still not quite sure, and I'm not a Signar player, so this is just random musing. Ha! Pun intended. But where does this leave Storm Division as a theme force? And is this at a point now where we need to look back and potentially change like one of the theme benefits, since it doesn't seem to be widely relevant to that theme force anymore?
So I'll touch on that on the next part of CID changes, I promise. I disagree vehemently that this was a unintended side effect. This has been in the game for 15 years.
Yeah.
This has been tested for two editions and it's been live for two editions that way. And I love everybody at Privateer Press I've ever met, but that's 100% just towing the company line.
Yeah.
That's
just like pulling a narrative out of your butthole.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't disagree.
Sure. No, like that rule's been around forever. And when we saw the rule change in Company of Iron, I think everybody, you know, kind of jumped for joy. And I was hoping that's essentially what we would see in War Machine. I know that's definitely what I wanted to see in War Machine. But I still, like, unforeseen or not, like, however that verbiage, you know, plays out, that still doesn't, like, I don't know. I'm really interested.
I'm not arguing that it was a bad mechanic for the game and it was getting around mechanics they wanted to exist. I'm arguing that it wasn't unforeseen. It was 100% foreseen.
Mm.
And that bothers me when they try to spin it as anything else.
Yeah.
In
a weird way,
anyway.
They could have meant that. Because, yeah, like, Nemo hasn't been different in forever, and like, like it's always been just super abusable. I mean, hell, I've had Sorsha 1 killed by it 8 years ago, and then killed by it again 4 years ago, killed by it again 2 years ago. Like, she's just gone through the ages of getting killed by Electro Leaves, but you know, storm pods and Storm Lances running up, and it's always just been awesome. And but now it's like POW 12, and it's, you know, bonuses to hit, and you know, it just like all the unintended. There might be more unintended stacking. They didn't just, you know, that might be what they're getting at.
I kind of think about this too in terms of like the whole idea. of shooting your own models in the back to arc electricity to them. I mean, now you can still do that, right? It's just I don't know how you get the you'd have to play a positioning trick to get the plus two strength on electrical damage rolls from a Firefly. And I don't know that necessarily you could do that on Nemo's feet turn with immunity anymore. Like it feels like there's probably an element of risk to shooting your own stuff in the hindquarters to have the electricity arc out. But I think that's okay. I think that's okay as long as there's an opportunity cost for doing that, right? So yeah. I'm going to use this tech that my army can do that gets around targeting restrictions, and it gets around a lot of defensive tech like cover and just not even being in line of sight. Like you can electro arc through a building as long as that's the closest thing within four. So it's kind of like, but that's the trade-off, right? So I'm going to do these things. The trade-off is that I'm going to, or I run the risk of doing substantial damage to my own heavy, or I run the risk of maybe shooting and eliminating my own models because I'm running Alexia and the Risen to do that, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And you can get, there are things you can do. You can run, like I said, you can run a Centurion with Arcane Shield, and then it's going to be arm 24.
Mm-hmm.
So there's workarounds. I think it's still going to be a very viable theme, and I'll discuss that when we get to the second one, which is Nemo. Nemo, they have changed so that what he's doing damage against has to also be in his control area. So instead of just popping your feet on 1B or 2A and blowing up the world, now you're popping it on 2B or 3A and blowing up the world, in all honesty. This puts Nemo in an interesting spot. I think Nemo now has to decide between, is he running Storm Division or Heavy Metal? If he runs Heavy Metal, he can do things like running that Centurion. If he stays in Storm Division, one, he's probably running less Storm Smiths. He's probably picking up a Squire, or he's really looking at a Reinhold. I still think he's very viable, and I think that's because he's still the best answer I've seen in Signar for Maelok at high-level play. And that's because every arc generator gun on average kills a Gatorman posse. And you've got 10 lightning generator guns and probably 6 storm lances in the most common build. And maybe I go back and revisit that list and I look at, do I modify some things on how it's run? But I think it's still a very viable list. And I would probably, if I was running Nemo 3, still be in Storm Division. I do think, is Storm Division still viable? It still very much is. Particularly because you can still get by with clearing, unjamming your guys with e-leaps. You just have to do it a little more difficult than it used to.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt I would run a 4 Firefly Striker 2 build again, but I would probably look at double Stormclad again and use them to clear him off. I'm still looking at Lightning Storm being very good for that. I'm still looking at a lot of options there. So I'm still very happy with how Signar ended up overall. It's a hit, but it also means that my second list doesn't have to be Storm Division, so I'm happy with that. It gives me some list diversity. I've been playing a lot of Siege 2 Haley 3 lately because it fits in a bag, and my Nemo 3 list is about 2/3 of a full-size bag.
Mm-hmm.
By itself, so I'm very happy with that change. I would ask how y'all feel on the receiving end, but since both of you play Kador and have large amounts of infantry and a large amounts of stealth infantry, I'm assuming it's Christmas.
Well, I think my answer lately has just been Harkovich into Signar anyways. That's like my I got to play Marauders or whatever, something along those lines.
Now I will tell you my frustration point is, once again, on verbiage that they used, Nemo 3 was along the lines of, as we do with all casters who have feats like this, the enemy has to be inside their control area, and then I keep looking at Butcher 1.
Mm-hmm. I've heard them say that Butcher 1, I've heard people murmur that Butcher 1's going to get it, although I'm surprised he didn't get it in this particular CID, but whatever. Well, not just Butcher 1, but Vlad. I mean, if you think of like Vlad 1. It's not, I mean, it's not his feet, but it's signs of importance, you know?
Yeah. So it just seems inconsistent. It seems like this is our design philosophy, except when it's not.
I mean, how many warcasters actually have that type of a feat, right? So you have Osram. No, not Osram. Ossian.
Yeah, Ossian.
Right? Osram doesn't have that. Osram's feat is plus Ossian, 3 strength.
Yeah, Ossian, though, Ossian has to be in his control, right? The enemy does?
Yes.
Okay, so
what about Durgan?
So we are talking about Ossian, as in the retcaster Ossian, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm backing myself up and going crazy here.
Ossian. But Durgan Madhammer has the Butcher 1 style, right? Just blast damage, emitting from guys next to him.
So Ron, Durgan, Xerxes 1, Butcher 1, let me think, Striker 2. I'm sorry, not two, Striker 3.
That's a good point. I didn't think about him.
I'm trying to think who else has... So basically, it's just Nemo 3 and McKay right now.
Exactly. So, what I think is happening is that they're saying, like, Nemo 3 is kind of like this weird cutoff because of his interaction with Electro Leaps. Like, I don't think if Electro Leaps existed, like, this wouldn't have happened to Nemo, but it probably would have happened to McKay regardless. So yeah. what's probably happening, and God knows that's a scary place. But in my mind, what I think is happening is that going forward, this is how it's going to be. I'm not sure that they'll go back and hit every one of them that are like that.
They will if there's a reason to. I mean, think about Kador. If they release him solo, who blast damage within 10 inches of him is additional die or plus 2 to blast damage rolls, that will 100% come back and get Vlad 1 and Butcher 1 to sort of make that solo. Rather than invalidate the solo, they'll invalidate every caster that benefits. So just to sort of get things back in balance or whatever. But it just depends on what they design themselves into.
That's fair. And there's no way for us to know that because we're not seeing, you know, what's going to happen, you know, 5 releases down the road. So this may be something that changes, not this CID, not next dynamic update, but maybe 3 or 4 dynamic updates down the road. We'll see this. Oh, by the way, Butcher changed, and then we'll know why, right?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. There was another change. Ace got cheaper. Ace lost advanced deployment, and Ace works with a junior warcaster as opposed to just a full warcaster for the infiltrate rule.
Hmm.
This change, they phrase it a whole bunch of ways, but it basically comes down to they don't want to make a rule that says you can't shoot your opponent's deployment zone on turn 1A. So we'll just remove every possible option you have for shooting into your opponent's deployment zone instead of just making a blanket rule. They did the same thing with Hunters. Now they're doing it with Ace. And if it sounds like I'm bitter, it's because a simple rule change would have prevented needing to do all of that. They made the same change with this works on Battlegroup Controller as opposed to this works on Worldcaster. They made the same change to the Devout, the Corruptor, and...
Real quick. Did Infiltrate always work with the other Warcasters, or did it only work with Kane before?
Infiltrate worked with everybody. The bullet types worked with Kane.
Work only with Kane. Okay, so that didn't change, because I was struggling to put it into my head which way was which, and I kept thinking the bond was stealth.
I mean, you're still only going to take it with Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, and that's probably where my brain was getting things conflated, but I just wanted to make sure.
I don't know if, I mean, the Devout with Tristan now gets a little bit better, I guess. The Devout with Severus Zero obviously gets better. The Corruptor with Iacos doesn't seem great, maybe with Denny Zero. So it's just general cleaning up. We want it to work with the juniors as well. That's a fine change.
Mm-hmm.
Gorman DeWolf went to Rat 6. And before I continue, Hutchuck and Gorman both gained Partisan Crucible Guard.
Yep.
And then Gorman also, the Acid Bomb warding got cleaned up. The Blind warding got cleaned up a little bit. And the most relevant part, Rust, is Constructs are -2 arm for 1 turn. It is no longer...
Warjacks?
It's no longer
Warjacks. I thought it was Warjacks and Battle Engines for some reason, but anyway, net result is... it's hunting season on wolves.
Oh, yeah.
Those poor wold wardens
now
are gonna go from arm 18 to arm 16, which basically makes them arm 19 under the caster who loves them most, So I don't know. That'll be interesting.
I don't see that. I mean, it's a buff to a Merc solo that rarely got taken.
Exactly.
And a minion solo that rarely got taken. I think it's a great change. I think it's perfectly fine and balanced. And it's a precursor for Crucible Guard. I think this it'll is just help. All around good.
Yeah, it'll help him get on the table.
And
he's not going to get on the table in a War Machine faction, I don't think. Just because you're already struggling with only one Merc solo slot in most themes. You're already struggling to figure out which one, you know, fits that bill, right? Because you only have one. You only have one. So I don't know that it necessarily helps him there. But, you know, if he and Huckchuck together are, you know, if they can be like a free solo in a Crucible Guard list later on, I think that's freaking cool. Like, that's cool. Like, I want to see Huckchuck on the table. That model is freaking fantastic.
And it's Gorman is one of the best models in the range. I'm literally looking at my shelf of models I've kept. So whenever I sell an army, I tend to keep a few painted models. So I've got two painted Gormans on the shelf that I can see from where I'm sitting because it's just such a great model.
Mm-hmm. I do wish, though, for the loot crate that they could get the rights to Darkwing Duck and have a Darkwing Duck Gorman.
Right.
Because
there's a whole bunch of mercs and minions that gained Crucible Guard on their list of who can take them.
Lame.
And then there's some Theme Force changes. Change one, Sons of the Tempest. Models in this army can upkeep spells on friendly Arcane Tempest models units without spending focus. This literally means that Kane Zero can upkeep spells. And I think Junior is allowable on that list, but don't quote me on that.
I can check.
But, I mean, it basically lets Juniors upkeep spells for free when targeting Arcane Tempest models.
Mm.
And I guess if you took a Merc Gaston, I'm not even sure he has an upkeep, so we'll just continue. The Protectorate and Kador Jack themes now allow Juniors. So Creator's Might can take Sevi Zero and any future battle group controller special rule and possibly Gaston. It says solos with battle group controller special rule. I don't remember if Gaston works for Minoth though. And then in Kador, it also allows solos with the battle group controller special rule, which allows Malakov 1 and Sorcha 0, which should be some cute things.
Hey, Brent.
Yeah.
Sons of the Tempest can take Junior. They can take the Arcane Shield Junior.
So you can put Arcane Shield on an ARM 11 unit and now not spend to upkeep it. You weren't anyway because they were all dead.
Well, wait a minute, though. Like, is it? Never mind.
I mean, if you put it on Kane himself,
well,
right?
I was thinking to myself, like, is there ever a point where you would want to, like, maybe blast damage, right? Like, so sure, the guy who gets direct hit's going to be toast, but maybe against blast damage, like, if it's, like, POW 6 or POW, or if it's, like, POW 7, I was thinking to myself, like, is it POW 7, POW 8 blast damage? At least they would need a 4 or 5 to kill, never mind.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Never mind, I'm an idiot.
Those guys just explode. Jaws of the Wolf I like. That allowing a Redline Jack or a Boundless Charge caster, I think it's going to actually change up. And you'll see some different casters. I really think there's some Assassination Strakov 1 lists that are going to come out the woodwork. I'm really, really looking forward to that because it plays a much different game and kind of shakes up the meta. I personally feel Kador has two very viable Jaws lists right now. I think you can run a Harkovic list. I would probably run it with three Colossals. I think you could run a Karchev list with a lot of Jacks. And I think Strakov opening it up with Juniors would give you another type of playstyle, an assassination-based one. That would be more dynamic and more fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, bro.
I don't know for certain, but it would be nice to see something different.
I know I tested while Sorcia was in CID. I tested that with a list. It was essentially Butcher 3, and then you ran both Juniors. Malakov had a Kodiak. Butcher 3 had a Kodiak. That way they could maintain roughly parity with distance with each other because Energizer and Redline kind of offset each other. And then, you know, Sorcia ran like a Marauder, I think, or a Rager. I tested it both ways. Ended up liking the Marauder more. But the thing about it is it actually helped Butcher quite a bit by having those two in there because it freed up some of his resources. Like, I felt like I could play him a little more comfortably and maybe camp one or two more a turn sometimes, which was really cool. and it kind of changed the way he inherently wanted to play. And then it also changed the way my opponent wanted to play, because Butcher 3 with Boundless Charge, even if you get rid of the doggos, right? So you take Pathfinder off of him that way, and then you give Pathfinder back to him, so then you have Vengeance and all the other threat range extensions, and so he ends up threatening like 20 inches if you trigger Vengeance. Or he has the potential to, anyway. And that was really fascinating. So I wonder if there's room to build into that. I'm sure that probably falls down the line of Strakov, and that it's probably stronger anyway, but it was just really cool to be able to use the juniors to free up resources in Kador, because typically like a lot of my Jack casters were really strapped. Like they're almost always strapped in Kador. So it was cool to be able to free them up like that, even if they didn't benefit from, you know, Energizer.
You got me on the Strakov tip. Let me look here. Sorcia's not out in War Room yet. No. That's okay. Oh, no. Yeah.
Now,
I want to throw Malakoff in there.
Now, they did preview Lock and Load is going to have Kane Zero. Sorcia Zero will probably be the last one to come out because her concept art lasted the longest to come out. But I wouldn't be surprised to see her come out August, September this year. And then there was one other change. Mercenary Theme Force Lelees received a nerf. Friendly Merc Lelees Merc units instead of okay, so you can take 2 units of Crucible Guard, Signar, or Protectorate, and they can include attachments, but now can no longer include ranking officers. Near as I can figure, there was a rules interaction where you could take any unit in Mercs you wanted, attach a ranking officer to it, and then it was a Signar unit, which would count as one of your Signar units. Now, you only have 3 ranking officers to draw from, but those 3 consist of a guy who gives the entire unit tough and has a mini feat tough with Crucible Guard, Murdoch, who has Go to Ground and Assault, which means that the Nis Hunters you brought into Lelees aren't terrible, and Protectorate has no spells and Pathfinder, I believe, is their second one. And I'm pretty certain bringing in 2 units of Forge Guard into Lelees who couldn't otherwise get heavy-hitting infantry, and then attaching Merc or Minoth can't nuke me either, makes it a really good unit. But I think they wanted to limit Lelees, and that just got around all of it. So that concludes the CID section. On the Signar side, like I said, really looking forward to these changes. It'll open up some list diversity, and it won't just be in other factions. I'm looking for different things in Signar now. I'm not going to feel like I'm going to be locked into certain casters as much anymore. And I'm not going to be looking at Kane Zero with regards to Haley 2 specifically. So I think it'll be good for the game. Did y'all have some Kador dojo you want to talk about post this?
Yeah. Just the solo, I don't know if it's good, but just the solo, you're like, it opens up the Strakov assassination. Personally, I honestly think that Strakov, his assassination potential in Winterguard Command is pretty off the charts, just because they get a 4-inch move before the game starts. And that basically sets him up pretty hard, especially if he's running Grolars, because they run, one runs 10, one runs, or 14, or whatever the heck it is. And it's like gross. But in Jaws with Sorcia, the Boundless Charge on the Grolars, if you go Grolars, I'm a big fan of the Grolars. But then you have her running a Victor, and then he can put Sentry on the Victor, which is exciting. So you're getting double Victor shots every turn, and then she's just pumping out Boundless Charge on the 2 Grolars, and then you still got 2 Greylord Forge Seers giving the Victor, you know, love and attention. Or Grolars, if they're lucky enough to be, you know, behind, they probably... The problem with Forge Seers in Strakov lists is that they tend to not be able to keep up with the Grolars, but you never know. A little bit of clever placement. And then I've got a full unit of Kyazi and a unit of Eliminators. I don't know if that list is better than my Eris 2 list, I was thinking, though.
In general, I'm just looking for anything that's more than just the, I'm going to take Sorcia 1, Vlad 1, or I think that's about it, paired with either Karchev or Harkovic.
Yeah.
I know from my lens, you know, I've been looking at a different list pairing. We've talked about it quite a bit. But Strakov himself, like, that list sounds really cool. The thing that always scares me about Strakov is just, it feels like there's so many games where you're just like, okay, I hope this die roll works, right? Like, and I just, I don't, I guess I'm just not good enough of a player to be able to mitigate that enough.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to make it work for me. Just the world scares the crap. How do you do it?
The world has changed for Strakov. That's why I like Grolar so much, is they hit, they knock you down with the hammer. So if you're trying to use a charge attack to, like, say, get through a tough model, unless they're immune to knockdown, they just die. So they basically, a high volume of the things that used to pester him is gone. Now, there's still some that exist, Madrak 1 and so on. But and then generally speaking, with Strakov, his game plan, especially with Grolars and Victors and stuff, his game plan is tight. It's a clever placement. You obviously have super alpha. You have to alpha in such a way that they have a very bad time. You have to alpha in a way that's more clever than like a standard alpha, which you have to eliminate things power to point and that have extended themselves in a way that they don't have a lot that can come and get you in response. Because you almost need two alphas. You can't just alpha and then hope that your Grolars are tough, because that won't work, because they'll kill two. Everybody can kill two Grolars, like literally everybody. You know, he's got a very hit-and-runny game. It's basically like playing Circle. If you like Circle's game plan, that's Strakov. And that's why I love Strakov. But Strakov's so extreme. He's way more extreme than Circle in his threat capabilities. Nobody can go to sleep. I mean, again, I've had games where it's just like tournaments where they move out of their, like, they move out of their deployment zone. And I'm like, well, I just warned them, like, based on where you've positioned, we can reset this game. Like, there's no point in playing unless you do some things, and you've moved your caster too late in the turn, and so, like, you know, if you want to take it back, you know, like, you have to, like, he's so ridiculous that people don't understand how much trouble they're in, and that's very powerful. If you're willing to be competitive, you should be winning, like, 80% of your games on basically gotchas, but they're the good kind of gotcha. It's like a gotcha of, like, you know, his threat's pretty unconventional, and it's tough to kind of... People know it. You're like, I've got a 22-inch threat. You know, they're like, could you add it all up for me? And just say 22, and then that's fine. And they still don't get it. Like, they still pooch it. It's hard to be 22 inches away from three different jacks or whatever. So,
well, I think it's just hard to be able to visualize a 22-inch nonlinear threat, right? That's extremely hard to look at the table and be like, can I cover all the geometric permutations that allow him to use 22 inches to get from point A to point B? Right. Like, that's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
Especially when they, you know, it's a Grolar. So he's Pathfinder and he can do weird things. Sometimes they'll stay out of line of sight, but then you can still trample and proc overrun, or do, you know, just anybody on the table start causes an overrun to happen. And then just weird things. Oh, so he's got beat back. It's just strange things happen with him. That's hard to predict. And, yeah, he just wins. Like, he's a good riverboat gambler. Like, he's always been, in my opinion, the riverboat gambler's choice. If you like playing, like, I always like Kane 2. Kane 2 is a kind of the. I always felt like he was the riverboat gambler captain of Signar. And if you kind of like that gameplay of, like, all or nothing, push your chips in bets, and, like, bold moves and very decisive games, that's, like, he's just super fun that way. So. Sorsha 3, I'm excited about. I wish Dracoons were in Jaws of the Wolf. Then that would be, like, the ultimate. It would be, like, Sorsha 3, as many Berserkers as I could fit with two Dracoons would be my list over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Instead, it's Sorsha 3, four Berserkers, and, like, a unit of Shock Troopers, a unit of Demogorgon, and some free solos, I think, is what I'll probably be playing. Is Sorsha 3 exciting for you? Or?
So, for me... I'm excited about Sorsha 3, but the casters that I'm really excited about right now, specifically with Armored Core, is Vlad 2. I love Vlad 2. Vlad 2 has a special place in my heart. I legitimately think he's one of the best, if not the best, warlock or warcaster in Kador. Like, I've always felt that way. Like, he just does so much cool stuff, right? So for me, I'm running, the list I'm running is... Let me pull it back up. But it's essentially Vlad 2 Conquest. There you are. It's Vlad 2 Conquest. You have two Kovniks, two Suppression Tankers, one Draken, a Forge Seer, a unit of Shock Troopers with a UA, a unit of Demo Corps with Dragos, Dragon, and Dragon, Dragaga, Dragon, Dragon, because Dragon guy. Mm-hmm. Commandant, the Kador Comm Commander, the Commandant Atanas.
Yep.
And then a unit of battle mechanics. And so I don't know necessarily if the list is all that. I don't know if it's going to be amazing.
Did you say suppression tankers?
Yeah, I'm running two suppression tankers.
All right, well then get Conquest out of there. Get that Victor in there.
You really think so?
Yeah. You got Hand of Fate, bro. You got huge range. You're dropping fire on people. It's a nice handy. You have a low model count, high punch in the dick quotient. So anything that helps you, those little baby AoEs, I hate the Conquest right now. The Victor's like my buddy.
Hmm. See, I was debating originally running a Victor. Mm-hmm. And that's what I originally had it with. I'm like, well, I have a point more. I really like the Creeping Barrage because it's essentially another form of covering fire, right?
Yeah.
And so I love the idea of being able to set up, like, because with Vlad, you set up areas where you drop, like, a couple of Wind Blast templates. And then you set up your covering fire. You set up your Creeping Barrages to where they can't, like, if they go past the Creeping Barrages, they take damage. If they don't go past the Creeping Barrages, they'll use all their movement getting out of the Wind Blast AoE. And they can't stay in the Wind Blast AoE because they can't shoot. So, like, if you space it right, you can really control what guns have access to shooting on your army, at least from infantry. Obviously, that's not going to stop a heavy. So I really like the idea of being able to use, like, basically double the fun, right? So you have, like, the two Creeping Barrage templates plus the two Covering Fire templates. But you might be right. It may just be too much. It may be a situation where just the two Covering Fire wall templates are enough. And I don't know, so I'll definitely play it both ways.
Mm. You want to give you the best argument for the Victor?
Sure.
So after you Wind Blast off a cloud from the Haley 3 player, you can then follow it up by putting continuous fire on everything in their army because you don't care that they're all dug in.
Yep.
Yep. And that's a really, really good case for – and that was the original purpose behind having Victor in the list. Was because I was originally building this as, like, well, what does this play? Does this play into Haley 3? Because we were talking about that, right? Like, can it play into Haley 3? And the ideology was like, well, it probably would do okay. And then once you add, like, the big, gigantic boom, boom of, you know, fiery death, it's, you know, it probably ups the odds a little bit.
Well, the other thing is he's rat 4 now, and he doesn't have a minimum range, which we know. But the point being is that he's got indirect fire, which at 20-inch range is bonkers. Like, that's so bonkers that I can't even wrap my brain around how bonkers that is. That is, like, beyond bonkers. That's really bonkers. So, like, whereas the Conquest has just direct fire, and it's cute when he crits, and that's fun. But, like, the ability to sit in the rear at the gear with Vlad, and you have your two heavy just blocks of garbage that are going to be out in front. Like, I think that's going to be pretty strong. Being able to shoot over them. And then in the people's stuff, like, they aren't going to be able to block LOS using models. I think it's going to be a good problem.
I hope so. I'm hoping the problem that presents with the firepower and the armor that gets backed up by it is too big to deal with. So, and that's what I'm hoping on. That's what I hope we see. So we'll have to. I don't know. I
also,
look forward to testing it.
Situationally, the AOE terrain will be almost as effective as cover fires. Sometimes. So you don't even lose that functionality entirely. You still have some board control elements if you need it.
Yeah, I keep forgetting he makes a gigantic template of rough terrain.
Yeah.
That's his third slot type.
Yeah, Victor. I'm all in on Victor. I desperately need a second Victor so bad.
All right. Okay, you sold me. I'll test it with Victor first.
If this were Mad Money, I'd be like, buy, buy, buy.
The stock on Victor's just went up. And then the other list that I'm currently testing is Old Witch 2. Old Witch 2 in Legion of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, Old Witch 2 is so good. She's so amazing. And I think she turns Legion of Steel up. Like, I think she dials them up. Just because, again, like, resiliency to guns.
I think Old Witch is a perfect caster in that she turns every tier list on. She'd be fantastic in Winter Guard. Like, POW 14 rockets are amazing. She's, you know, and also when you want range superior, you know, if you've got a gun line and you have range superiority, that's also very good. Jaws of the Wolf, she's spectacular in because of the boundless charges and everything else. Obviously, Legion. She's just like, you just can't, there's not a tier list you can't plug her into. She's actually kind of an idyllic caster in terms of her sort of mutability. She kind of goes with everything. But yeah, it's exciting that you like her with Legion because, you know, Iron Fang Pikeman and stuff.
Yeah, but, and it, I mean, the obvious tricks with, like, Ulans and Curse of Shadows. Like, not only does it help Ulans hit harder, which, I mean, Ulans still, I mean, they hit pretty hard as is. But not only are you helping Ulans hit harder, but they can't just jam up your Ulans and expect that to stop them from working. Because you just curse the shadows of the unit and then just charge right through them. Mm. Or, you know, like it helps your Iron Fang Pikemen hit a bit harder. And it's really interesting, too. Like, she herself is really interesting because with Reconstruct, I don't know. I'm going to test her with a more melee-oriented battle group. Most of the time when I played her, I always tested her with, like, a ranged battle group, right? So, like, a pair of destroyers. But she doesn't have any way to make my own dudes blast immune, so there's a chance I can hurt my own stuff, which I'm not entirely thrilled about. And with Reconstruct, I kind of want to put, like, a pair of Clamjacks, the one with Reign of Death. What is the name? Oh, my goodness.
Devastator.
Devastator, thank you. I kind of want to put a pair of Devastators in the list because a Devastator with Reconstruct is probably ridiculous. But on top of a Devastator with Reconstruct, like, it's also one of those situations where, like, they're just really hard to get out of the way. So, like, they're steady, they're sturdy, they're really high arm. So I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, well, if they try to come in on Old Witch, like, if they're just that much quicker than me, then maybe there's additional layers of defensive play I can use with models that can't be knocked down, can't be pushed around. And maybe that's what helps me keep Old Witch alive a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's necessarily smart to play them specifically for the defensive value, but I don't need the Warjacks to break armor in that list. So the Warjacks have to serve a purpose. To me, keeping Old Witch alive seems like a valid purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, I find that generally speaking, Jaws of the Wolf plays without range. You always have the potential of getting kind of a little bit outmaneuvered by clever players. But SR has more and more honed in on the ability of evening the odds against an evasive army. And Jaws just pounds you so hard with relatively fast. Or sorry, not Jaws, Legion. Legion pounds you so hard. So yeah, having just melee jacks running up behind all that crap will be pretty annoying to deal with, especially because they, you know, it's hitting people with the same hammer twice, you know, multiple times. Like, they can't, there's like three units of Iron Fang Pikemen and a unit of Ulans and then two Juggernauts or three Juggernauts. It's tough to pick what you're going to scalpel out, and you just won't. You'll choose wrong because you can't. Everything's fast enough to collapse with reach. They all have 11-inch threat, which is a pretty big front end. So things on the out can collapse to the middle. The things in the middle can collapse out to the edges. So nobody can just pick away at stuff. And then again, you're going to be too fast and up there to, with your range advantage, they can't use their range. Yeah, I think this thing is good. I think she's perfect for it.
I will tell you that if I can end up barring Kador, I'm taking it to the next KC Masters qualifier or local tournament I'm going to as well. Probably with Sorcerer 3, though.
Oh, yeah. A big time Sorcerer 3. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, the junior Warcaster in Jaws of the Wolf does, in fact, solve something that me and Nick were lamenting, though, when we went and played at the Bug Eater. We were like really excited about Sorcerer 3 for some reason on the way back, and I was just dojoing her super hard in the van. And we got into this mindset of, like, you know, how do we screw Haley 3 with Sorcerer 3? And we came up with this idea of Jaws, which didn't work because it wasn't legal at the time, but now it is, which is that you put a Devastator on Malakov, and then she gives it +2 speed with her little spell. So it's got +4 speed, so it runs 16 inches. So she gives it +2 speed, moves up clouds. So, you know, all the little dug-in dudes cloud in front. Oh, that's so cute. They're walled out. You put your clouds on their clouds, and then you run a Devastator through them, behind them, and push them all into your clouds, and they take a point of damage. That's our mad tech. We're super excited about it. And now it's legal.
Huh.
I did stuff like that a lot with...
oh, yeah. I'll believe me.
Repulsion and Saren.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, anybody who's played against... who's that stupid Gordon? Jesus Christ, Gordon's the worst about it. But yes, it's always been a tried and true, super fun tech. And I used to do it with Vlad, kind of, situationally. But this is just sort of basically as good, only with an easier to apply clouds.
Huh.
Yeah, it's going to wreak some havoc. I'm going to catch some people good with it. I'm positive.
Huh.
You okay there, Scott?
My brain is just processing a whole bunch of different things right now.
Also,
there's so many ways that'll work. That's so cool.
It's also cool. What's that?
A lot of people don't see it coming either.
Yeah, exactly. The flaws in it where it's not exciting is, honestly, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm like, is there just that much single wound infantry? But I think it's actually pretty smart against a lot of things. Like, There's some Crixalis that it'll be good into. There's some, or that you'll be able to get some effect out of it. I don't know. Well, like, I'll have to see the meta at large. I see a lot of just heavy crap you just, you know, not that exciting about doing things to. But it also can be used to push a heavy that's out of line of sight into line of sight with the Devastator and, in, you know, push it into range of your dudes. So there is that part. One second. I'll be right back.
You have new tricks and things to try out now, don't you?
Yep, I sure do. I'm looking forward to it. I legitimately think the list pair between Old Witch 2 and Vlad 2 is a good list pair. The more I kind of look at it, the biggest challenge I think I'm going to have is understanding exactly where the line gets drawn between Legion of Steel and Armored Core as to where I can drop what. Because in a lot of ways, the lists kind of bend their purposes, or they kind of blend together with the purposes of the list. So, like, they're both pretty resilient against shooting, right? But they're resistant against shooting in different ways. One of them is more of a positioning thing, and your resistance to shooting is really more of a way to just kind of prod them forward. The other way is, you know, I'm just going to blanket reduce the range in your guns by 5 inches. They both can hit very hard. They both can be surprisingly resilient, either based on numbers of dudes or based on hitboxes in the army. So it's, in a lot of ways, it kind of feels like they maybe kind of want to do the same job, but just the way they operate and the things that they do in terms of the model selection and the tactics used, like, they're very different lists. And I think the challenge is just going to be identifying exactly where one of them is stronger than the other and learning how to play to those strengths. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I will tell you that Old Witch 2 has a bit of a learning curve, I'm told.
I believe it. I don't know how I keep her alive. I mean, people obviously keep her alive. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I mean, that's part of the reason why I was looking at a pair of clamjacks, is essentially a stopgap for her, to prevent stuff from getting on her in melee. And I don't know. I don't know. And she's a battle engine caster, and the thing about battle engine casters is they're either really, really good, or they're really, well, they're almost all really, really good, but they're really fragile. They're far more fragile than you think. And the one that you would think would be super fragile, Lilith 3, is actually the hardest to kill out of the entire mess. So I don't know. It's going to be a strong learning curve. So we'll see.
What else is out? So you're all in on Kador, huh, Scott?
I'm sorry. I think my headphones cut out there for a second. What was that, Brent?
They did. So you're all in on Kador, huh?
I mean, I definitely want to go back and play him. I started Mark III in Kador, and I had a lot of fun with him.
What will the poor Kith and Creel feel?
Oh, trust me, they're not going anywhere. I don't know. There's a lot of things I really liked about Kador in terms of, like, the models and how they play, and I really like Old Witch. So I'm going to spend some time in him. I don't know. I tried Circle. I like Circle. Wormwood is awesome. I love Wormwood. So cool. I got tired of playing Bones. Like, it felt like all my lists, even in a competitive pairing where they would maybe play differently, it just felt like all my lists were the exact same stuff. Like, it was the same. I mean, the model overlap was probably in the 75 to 80% overlap range. So, but I wanted to take a break from Trolls. I own a lot of Kador, so it just seems like a reasonable thing to do. And I've always had a good time with Kador. Besides, it might be a good time to kind of go back to my roots in the game a little bit and just kind of goof off there for a little bit and just see where I go. Because I did have a lot. A lot's a significant over exaggeration, but I did have some success with Kador. The best tournament play I've ever played has been with Kador. So we'll see what happens. I'll go back and play that for a little bit and see where I go.
I do think it's still another month minimum before CID for Circle will hit.
Yeah. Well, aren't they taking a break for the summer too?
They're also going to be doing Ret and then.
Yeah, I thought after Ret was
before
like
they do Circle, but yeah.
Yeah, they're going to do like a Ret mini CID, which I don't know exactly what constitutes a mini CID, but from my understanding, I guess it's going to focus maybe a little bit more on like the theme forces and a couple of models.
No new models was the verbiage.
Right. So it's going to focus on like the stuff they have and the theme forces that fit in them. I don't know how big it's going to be, but they're going to do that. And that's going to come after Lock and Load. And then Circle CID is going to come sometime later. So I'm looking forward to it. I really love Circle Living Beasts. And it's not that I didn't like Bones. Bones is fun. I play World Wardens in Wormwood because they're good. And then I play World Wardens in Bradagus because they're good there too. And then I play World Wardens in Kruger 2 because they're good there too. And then, like, it just, what ends up happening is like, no matter how I build my lists, I end up playing essentially the same six models, just in different varying quantities, because that's just the way Circle list building is right now. And that's not fun for me. That doesn't give me the break that I wanted from Trolls.
Yeah, Kador is like the jank tank. I mean, that's all it is. You got options for days.
So what else do we have?
Madrek 3 is awesome. There, I said it.
So you're rescinding your Trolls are bad statement?
Just this one list. Just this one, you know. Let's settle down before we get back on the old high horse there, buddy. I think it's got some... It's more the point of... So when I played at the Bug Eater, I was miserable because I was playing Trolls, and Trolls are terrible. But I accidentally punched up in my list Madrek 3 instead of Madrek 1, and that was awkward. But it forced me to, like, kind of observe his rules all day, because I was trying to look up Madrek 1's rules all day. And I got to start kind of appreciating, like, it clicked with me his whole point, which was Power of Dunia, where he can run just two Colossals in Mulg, and then he's got an Arknode for Rebuke, plus, like, the Sea King's Animus. And then he himself is the Creel Stone, so you don't have that rules bloat or that support bloat. And it's all business all the time. He just, like, he's such an enabler. So I was super excited about, I was like, damn it. Right when I was like, I'm done with you guys, the perfect list fell into my lap. But we don't have to talk about Trolls. Poor Brent. He's had to talk about Kador.
I mean, I managed to get through the Kador Dojo.
Yeah.
I don't think I do much Troll Dojo.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Kador Dojo and Troll Dojo is wonderful dojo.
Well, no. They're totally different things. Kador is great dojo, because you can go on for days. There's tons of variety and interesting things to think about. And with Trolls, not so much. But, you know, so yeah. We talked about one fun thing. We can talk a little bit. We had the dessert, and now we can kind of move in with the mashed potatoes.
Uh-huh.
The boring.
All right, listeners, here goes. You guys need to tell us, Troll Dojo or Kador Dojo or Signar Dojo, which is easily the worst of the three. You need to tell us which one's the worst and which one's the bestest. I need to make that a poll.
You don't even, like, I'm not Signar, buying the there's poll. No such thing as Signar Dojo. You just go to DGI and you look at, like, the last three tournament winners, and then you just write those lists down. And that's also applies for Crix and probably.
So you
that's
say
not
that.
How you well, find Signar lists. You find Signar lists by asking Brent what he's playing.
Hmm.
So there was a legitimate discussion between me and three other Signar players earlier today about which battle group was best for Haley 3 and the fine tuning differences between the three options, because there were exactly three options.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
I don't
think it's necessarily as enrapturing as here's 14 jacks or here's 13 jacks of slightly different versions, but, you know, we make do.
Right. Again, Signar Dojo. Just where does Trolls get the bad rep for Troll Dojo? I don't get this. Where does this reputation come from? Troll Dojo is fun.
Chad and 2 hours of Troll Dojo. That's where the reputation comes from.
Well, that and Troll players in general have a rep for wanting to talk about Trolls.
Yeah, we're happy. We're passionate about our faction. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's perfectly okay to be that way.
Yeah, but there's nothing to talk about. Like, so when, like, Crix players or Signar players brag, or I should say talk dojo, they're mostly just talking about,
drone?
They're just talking about tournament results. Like, oh, man, last weekend, I just destroyed. I basically, it was like, that meta is like a hot dog down a hallway after I got done with it. Like, I just plowed. And then, you know, that's, like, kind of what they're talking about. Whereas with Trolls, they're like, I think if I took Doom Shaper 1 in runes, and then I took some rune shapers, and I'm like, yeah, it's just, it sounds like you're talking about adult War Machine stuff, but let the Crix and Signar players talk.
How controversial can I be on my next comments? Scott 1:27 is the timestamp for when you need to cut this later. You know, I think I figured out why Troll Dojo just goes on forever, because you're already going into the tournament knowing you're not going to win, so you might as well have fun with it and discuss all the different variations of Def 12 you can pick.
Mm-hmm. That's not that controversial.
That's hurtful.
In all seriousness. And I'm not trying to pick on anyone on the cast. I'm referring to all Troll players when I say that.
Yeah. Also,
but in all seriousness, I think it's because of all the factions, trolls get into their faction more than anyone else.
They do. Here's the thing. Trolls talk about it the most. They, as a faction, I swear to Christ, and this is probably just a perception issue, I think they innovate the least. Like, they're the least interested in the breadth of their faction. So whenever they're talking about Dojo, most of the time it's just puking up the same crap. Like, you can only hear the same Kilgrima list or the same Kalandra list or the same... It's like, this is like one of the six lists that's ever been made for trolls. And no one's like, no one really deviates into like the jank tank. And maybe they do, but I just don't hear it. I'm always hearing like the standard stuff. I mean, that was like the funny thing with Chad, is that he would start going into Troll Dojo. And then Josh would be like, and then there's Mog and an Earthborn. And then is there a Mauler? And like, you know, Josh would just be like, let me guess where this is going. And then, you know, he'd be like, just tell me the caster and I'll guess what your list is. And then Chad would always be like, hey, come on now. And then Josh would guess, proceed to guess the next 16 things in a row. And there'd be like, well, I got like a gobber chef. You know, like there'd be like some things at the end that it was a big wild card. Sure. But, you know, that's sort of the
tiny little amount of points.
Yeah. Signar.
We have a tendency to stick types.
Yeah, like today, is the Earthborn the best heavy? And don't get me wrong, but it's like Earthborn, Mauler, Bomber, Mulg. Like, anyways, it's just, that's not a discussion.
Yeah, well, the answer is the Marauder, but that's not the point. The point is, I don't know, I could say, you know, it's actually funny whenever you talk about that, because, like, it almost feels like at times there's a personality behind the people who play certain factions, mm-hmm. right? Like, you could kind of, like, look at the faction and kind of get an idea as the personality. Of course, this has absolutely no basis in science. And it is absolutely not accurate in the least. But it just feels like that, right? So, like, it's just, and it's funny because when it comes to trolls, like, yeah, like, I can see what you're saying. You know, like, we're always too predisposed with drinking as much as possible in a short period of time than we are, like, innovating the next big list. Like, I can see that. I can see that. That's what makes trolls sweet, though.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen the beer wagon, like, in play at a tournament?
Yes.
Okay, shoo.
It was paired with another battle wagon.
Okay, that'd be pretty interesting, I think. There's going to be a lot of interesting lists that you're never going to see just because of the Black Heavy Industries. It makes it sort of unattainable or whatever. It's not technically unattainable. Anybody can just call them and order it, but...
But it is still a very expensive model, for sure.
Yeah. It's got to be... It's in that weird unfun zone of, like, it's got to cost justify itself on a value perspective, not just a cash to model per painting. You know, like, people are like looking at two regular battle engines, basically. I'll just make a regular two battle engines list in Creel Company for the same cost as the one beer barrel. But anyways, that's more of a side thing. That's got nothing to do with Troll Dojo being sucky or Kador Dojo being interesting and deep and interesting.
I mean, Kador Dojo is pretty, it is like, there's some jank there.
Mm-hmm. Kador Dojo is amazing because it's basically like you're trying to solve global warming. Like, you're just like, where do we start? And then, you know, the problem is just too vast to really think about, but it's an interesting exercise.
I don't know. Seems like you have a good idea with Strakov. I'm curious to see what happens when you start putting it on the table more, especially with, like, Source of Zero. I'm curious to see how that affects it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty cool.
New products coming out. We released 3 CID packs, Kador for the Armored Company. And then the Lailies pack for Mercs and Legion, the Ogres. So those are out. And then we've released the buildings, the houses. I don't think I made it a formal announcement on Facebook. So we've kind of been selling them, but we never had the big, like, everybody jumped in and got them day. So I think we never actually had the, like, formal announcement. But just to announce it here, that they are out, so you could just buy them. It's a big house and a little house for $40. And it's a pretty cool little pack. And then also... I'm almost done with an SR2018 like token pack, which is just three tokens. It'll be like three tokens for $4 or something. And it is the magic attacks, the repair, so you can know who's been repaired, and then the token says on it like maintenance, so that you remember when to use it, as opposed to, so you like, my idea is you put the token on the objective and then you throw it at, you know, it's just a reminder token. And then also has the Pathfinder, so it's like a little pirate map to a pirate treasure, but, you know, circumvents through, like, anyways, each one is kind of telling a little story. The magic attack is like a magic hat, and it's like a floating like white glove with a wand, and then it's got like a nuclear cloud coming out of the magic hat with like sparklies everywhere. So sort of the, you know, me pull out a magic attack out of my butt.
We did tell you 2 days or 2 weeks from today they're releasing SR18, right?
Yeah, but do you think it'll be different?
Or 19? Hopefully not.
Yeah, yeah. My theory is I think it'll be I think they've honed in on kind of an ideal objective thing. Maybe they'll get wacky. Who knows?
Well, that actually... I'm sorry, Brent. Go ahead.
I was going to ask if you had a Howled Avenger trigger for Faithful Masses, out of curiosity. I don't know how you track that type of trigger.
What?
For Minoth or for any Jack with Howled Avenger.
Well, we got blank tokens, so you can just throw a blank down. What's... Or there might be a Hallowed Avenger token. I could there could also just be extra Vengeance tokens. What brought on the Menoth question? Did they just get a CID that I'm not...
Faithful Masses is one of their existing themes.
Okay.
And all of the Jacks have Hand of Vengeance, Righteous Vengeance, something like that.
Oh. Yeah, we probably don't have, if they're doing Jack spam in that theme, we probably don't have, 20of those tokens in their sets anywhere. But
probably
we do have,
need to make
we do
about
have several.
Six of those.
Yeah.
For, when the CID Minoth pack comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Actually, it might be kind of cool to do, I don't know. I don't know how the printing process works with Double Sided or whatever, but, if you can do some of them that are, Hallowed Avenger, and then some of them that are Hand of Vengeance or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I would buy a Menoth kit just to get another Hallowed Avenger token, I think. Because for some reason I'm missing a Hallowed Avenger token off of one of my models, virtuals anyways. So, but yeah, it'd be cool, just to have that. Because there's also I got it. You could do one that's Hand of Vengeance or Righteous Vengeance, or one of them would be Hand of Vengeance, and then the other side of it would be Righteous Vengeance, because there's tons of models that have Righteous Vengeance.
Mm.
And that would be amazing too. Sorry, my brain just started to click in, and then all of a sudden words start coming out, and I couldn't stop myself.
Was there anything else new coming out?
Yeah.
Or being worked on?
A Cloud Stepper is coming out. I finished it today. It's basically a little stick. It's about 7 inches long, and it's got these grooves in it where you can do multiple things. It's got 7 divots in it, so it kind of looks like a comb or a brass knuckle, or kind of looks like a... You'll have to see it to understand what it looks like. But you can either do 7 one-inch movements in a straight line with it, and you can stand it up on its end, and they still fit the base properly. The nice thing about this, it doesn't matter if you're 30 mil, 40 mil, or 50 mil. It's a 1-inch step for every base size across 7. But if you go every third one, so it's the 1, the 4, and the 7, or whatever, it allows you to place up to 3 models in a straight line exactly far enough apart so that you can put clouds down, and then the clouds will be touching, which is the actual point of it. But the cool thing about it is that you can do it with Kodiaks or... It works the same for Kodiaks or Trenchers or medium-based models who do it. Anybody who puts a cloud down, you can use this to space them out properly, as Colin mentioned today. But what if I only want to just space 2 guys out? Well, then you could just do 2. That's the point. It's idea is to speed things up if you want to put 3 models in a straight line. But if you just want to do 2 and then move it over and just do 2 differently, you know, however you want to, you can kind of, it's a pretty easy piece to sort of maneuver. The idea is that it has a small footprint on the table, it can get out of the way, and it's very easy to just sort of handle. So, anyways, it's sort of technology that I've been wanting to do. I shouldn't say technology. It's just a simple widget I've been wanting to do since forever, because it kind of solves a bunch of different little problems that come up.
Huh. Yeah, I'm going to have to see a shot of that. I'm having trouble picturing it, but
yeah,
it makes sense.
It looks like a Sawbones.
I understand what you're saying, I just don't know how it works in a widget.
Yeah. If you are a Guild Ball player, you'll notice that our Omaha template, or our Utah, whatever the one, the big one, the 2x4x6, whatever, on the 2-inch side, it has these 2 little divots in it That's literally the same thing. It's the same exact. The idea is that's a one-inch step. We in our base War Machine set have the precision measuring set. We have three steppers: one for small, medium, and large bases. What we didn't understand when that was invented was that the small one technically works for the medium and large bases. So you only ever actually need the small one, and then the form factor of the small one isn't ideal. It doesn't sit on the table well. Like it's hard to just handle it. So this solves that problem. So we don't have, you know, it's a good way to kind of get rid of those one-inch steppers. If you're a Guild Ball player, you still have the cool one on the end of your Omaha, which is exactly the same thing. It's super functional. But now we're kind of introducing it in a more convenient way for War Machine dudes. I'm excited about it. I hope you guys like it.
I look forward to seeing it.
And then there's just still Batman was supposed to come out. I think I'm releasing that this Friday. Jay's been selling it on Chain Attack because it was supposed to come out. It was supposed to come out like a month ago, and we got annihilated by distribution stuff. So we've been digging ourselves. I'm kind of finally coming out of my cubbyhole and getting caught up on like all the stuff I've been working on. So you'll start seeing a steady stream of new stuff. But I think that's good. That's probably a wraparoo.
I've still got a Red Army if anyone wants to paint up some Grimkin.
And Brent is still looking to trade a Retribution Army for painted
Brent
Grimkin.
Has been really lazy at trying to trade it.
It's the asking cost is too great.
Yeah, because it's painting.
Yep. It's also painting for models. Painting for models.
So, but yeah, no, Riz probably is a wrap. Scott, you got anything else?
This has been another exciting episode of Mise en Minis, episode 344. I'm Nigel.
Brent.
Seabass.
And thank you all for listening.
Using and amusing.
And that's that.